Hi, everybody. Welcome back to our show. Now, today I am going to be going through a PowerPoint lecture on the map of consciousness. And this is something that I think is so incredibly important. And I'm really excited to share this with everyone today. So for those of you that are watching on YouTube, there's going to be a PowerPoint presentation that I'll be walking everybody through. If you're listening to this on the podcast, I will do the best I can to break it down for you so that it's very user-friendly. If you want to watch the PowerPoint, just hop over to Dr. Jason Loken, ND on YouTube, and you can watch the episode on video. So Map of Consciousness is basically the foundational work by Dr. David Hawkins, MD, PhD. And I came across Dr. Hawkins' work back when I was, probably somewhere in the middle of my naturopathic school training, and I came across Dr. Hawkins' work. So this was probably over 20 and 25 years ago, sometime back then. And I was actually at Chapters studying for exams. We had nonstop exams all the time going through naturopathic medical school. And I was really starting to get into mind-body medicine and spirituality and trying to understand how all of this interplayed with health. And I was reading a lot of work by like Wayne Dyer and even stuff by Deepak Chopra and some of this sort of this other work. And what I found was, especially with Wayne Dyer, as I was reading some of his work, I kept finding references to Dr. David Hawkins. And then I would read other people's work and they would reference Dr. David Hawkins, and specifically his book, his revolutionary book called Power Versus Force. And so after reading all of these other people over and over again and keep hearing Dr. David Hawkins come up, I finally wanted to figure out, like, okay, who is Dr. David Hawkins and what has he been writing? And so basically I got Power Versus Force, which was the very first book that he did. And it was just mind blowing. It put so many things into perspective for me. He talked about the map of consciousness, which I'm going to break down in a lot of detail for you guys today and explain what that meant. And how it just gave so much perspective to what was going on in the world and in my life, and how, where I was at and how that influenced what was going on and how I saw the world and how the world reacted back to me. And ultimately, what I love about it is it puts the power back in your hands as far as being in the driver's seat of your own life. And so then I really dived into a lot of the work by him. I read other members' books. I've listened to so many of his lectures. And I would go down to Arizona. He was in Sedona for quite some time. And I would go down to Sedona with a couple of other friends of mine that really liked his work as well. And we would go to his lectures and I would meet him. And such amazing experiences. And Dr. Hawkins passed away, I think, almost a decade ago. I can't remember exactly, 2011, 2013, somewhere in that zone. But his work still goes on. There's so much valuable work that he's done. He's done so many books and so many lectures. And I highly encourage everybody who's interested in this stuff to go and check his stuff out, because it's really, really valuable. And I've noticed over this past year that his work in the Map of Consciousness has come up in many diverse groups. So his information is coming out in more and more ways. But I think always, whenever you hear it from somebody else, go to the source, go and learn and hear it from his words. Even as I'm interpreting it and I'm explaining it, I'm doing the best that I can in using it as best as I can in the way that he would describe it. But again, go and read it for yourself. Listen to his words, listen to his lectures. I'm not going to be able to do it justice in the way that he can, but I will do my best as a longtime student of his. Now, that is the Hawk himself. That is Dr. David Hawkins. Just beautiful soul, an absolute gift to this world. Just a dear, dear teacher of mine. And these are a number of his other books that he wrote. So Healing and Recovery, Reality, Spirituality, and Modern Man, Discovering the Presence of God, Transcending the Levels of Consciousness, Truth Versus Falsehood, the Eye of the Eye, Power Versus Force. And there's been some other books in there too. Letting Go is another one. And then the most recent one called The Map of Consciousness Explained. And this is basically where I'm going to be breaking down this lecture, is more or less from this book, which I highly recommend everybody go and get. You can get that on just about anywhere. You can go from their site that I'll put on the link to, or you can go on Amazon and check it out. Now, why I think this is so important, there's a quote from Dr. Hawkins. He said, "We change the world not by what we say or do, but as a consequence of what we have become. The planet is full of people trying to change the world, but doing so only at the level of symptom, not source. This kind of force creates counterforce, and we end up with gridlock rather than greatness. Greatness comes from within. It is the courage to change oneself." And the map of consciousness gives you the tools and the awarenesses to make those changes that we all need to make to ultimately create the changes in our life, which ripples out to the loved ones around us, to our communities, and ultimately ripples out to the world at large. So whenever we want to make changes, we don't have to step too far outside. We need to start from within. And then from that place, everything starts to evolve when it starts with us. A lot of times I think it's actually a lot easier. It's easier for us to try and focus outside of ourselves and try to create big change in somewhere else. But a lot of times we need to come back, and it needs to start from within. That's the only way that real change actually happens. So these were big lessons for me, and I'm hoping that they will also be great lessons for yourselves. Now, this is my bookshelf. And you will see up here on the left corner over here, I have an area that's pretty much dedicated to Dr. Hawkins' work. So a number of his books, a number of his different tracks and audios and videos and so much wonderful information. So today we're talking about the Map of Consciousness Explained, a proven energy scale to actualize your ultimate potential. And when Dr. Hawkins created the Map of Consciousness, his main goal essentially was to help people understand the world better. That was really at the heart of it. And his mission was really to try to ease suffering in a lot of ways and just help people understand the road. If they had a roadmap, then they could navigate their life in a more easeful way with less pitfalls. And so Dr. Hawkins traveled the entire map. He's gone down from the bottom right up to the very top. And that's Dr. Hawkins right there. And that is him with myself meeting him in Arizona and Sedona. And I tell you, when I met him and our eyes met, it actually brings tears to your eyes. Even as I think about it right now, I can get pretty welled up as I think about that moment. Now, when I said Dr. Hawkins traveled the map, he literally traveled the very depths of the map right up to the highest levels of the map. And so what you'll see here on the YouTube channel, on the PowerPoint, is the Map of Consciousness. And so I think the easiest way to think of the Map of Consciousness is the level of consciousness is literally like the lens that you see the world through. And each level has a specific emotion that's related to it, has a process that's related to it. It has a self view, so how we view ourselves and how we view life. And it also has a spirit view or a God view, how we view God or source or whatever we consider, whatever we like to name that. And so the level of consciousness essentially is the lens at which we see everything through. And within these different levels is a certain amount of power to make change in your life, especially to make positive change in your life. And what Dr. Hawkins found was that this was a logarithmic scale. And he gave it a numerical value of everything from as low as zero, which is basically death, all the way up to 1,000, which would be pure enlightenment. Now, I wonder if there's things that are even changing within this currently with what I'm understanding of what's going on in the planet today. And if you've watched any of our series on science, mysticism, and beyond, we talk a lot about what's going on and even with the concept of more light coming into the planet and our bodies literally going through a physical upgrade with changes taking place in dormant aspects of our DNA. When you listen to Dr. Todd Ovocatus, and he explains what's going on in that regard too. So I wonder if we're even capable of moving beyond the level of 1,000 at this point, because how Dr. Hawkins would talk about it is that the physical body can only hold so much energy. And it would literally wouldn't, we wouldn't be able to, our nervous system would not be able to handle anything above that. But I'm wondering right now, I've given the changes that I understand are starting to happen on the body and within the planet, if this scale might even adjust. Maybe there's higher potential than what we've even thought of based on what Dr. Hawkins has put here. So that'll be something very interesting to see what goes on over the next several years. Now, the scale is a logarithmic scale. So when you see at the bottom of the scale, the level of, say, shame at the numerical value of 20, think of that as a logarithm. So think of that as 10 to the 20th power. So when you move up to, say, guilt, which would be at 30, still very low level of consciousness, but guilt is actually much more powerful than shame, for example, which would be, guilt would be 10 to the 30th power. Now, think about going higher and higher and higher. You get up to, say, a level of like courage, which would be 10 to the 200th power, or the level of love, which would be 10 to the 500th power. So you start to get the idea that the level of consciousness that we are existing at has a significant ability to impact our lives. And there's, when he says power versus force from his first book, basically the level of 200 is the cutoff. And we're going to talk about the importance of the level of 200 as we go along here. But everything below 200 is essentially anti-life. It's not supportive for life. So when you're operating from any of these fields below 200, which would be everything from shame at 20 to guilt at 30 to apathy or hatred at 50, grief at 75, fear at 100, desire at 125, anger at 150, and pride at 175. All of those levels of consciousness are actually anti-life. They're not supportive for life. When we get to the tipping point of 200, which is the level of courage, that's when we start to move to benefiting our lives in quite dramatic ways. And so we're going to talk about the importance of two sort of main fulcrums within this system that we can actually make dramatic changes in our lives when we hit those. 200 being one of them, that's the level of courage. And so once we hit that and we start to move upwards, then we start to really be able to make substantial impacts in our lives. And this is when we move through things like courage, upwards to neutrality, which is at 250, willingness is at 310, acceptance at 350, reason at 400, love at 500, joy at 540, peace at 600, and then levels of enlightenment from 700 to 1,000. Now, these are actually incredibly rare to get up into these upper levels of consciousness. And we'll talk a little bit about that as we go along here. But just so you get an idea of what the levels of consciousness are, at the end of this, when I pull the map back up, I will explain what we mean by tying in emotion and the self view or the world view and the spirit view of, or the God view of how we look at that. But you'll get an idea of, it basically acts as sort of a mirror so that when we are going through any situation, we can reflect on the level of consciousness to get an idea of how am I interacting with my world? Where am I actually at? And then when you see the different levels, you have an understanding then of what's required to maybe move to the next level. And we get an idea of where we're getting stuck in certain situations or with certain people, certain dynamics, certain relationships. Where do we keep getting stuck? And then what's required for me to move out of that into the next level? So let's do a bit of an overview of the map of consciousness, just so that everybody starts to get an idea. So it looks linear, but the fields of consciousness are logarithmic attractor fields. So like I said, these are logarithms. So it's 10 to the 20th power, 10 to the 100th power, 10 to the 500th power. So substantially larger attractor fields. And we'll talk about attractor fields in just a moment here so you get a better understanding of that. Think of the attractor field like a magnetic field. And so some fields are very powerful while others are very weak, okay? Like smaller magnetic fields within a larger, more powerful field. All of these fields exist literally within our universe at the same time within ourselves, but we are slipping into different fields depending on what is going on. And ultimately, as we progress in consciousness, the essence of who we are starts to stabilize more at specific levels. Now, it doesn't mean that we don't dip in and out. I mean, if we're having a human experience here, we're going to jump all over the map. But the essence of who we are is what we're usually getting at. So, for example, if someone is operating at the place of willingness, like 310, which is a very powerful field of consciousness, that would mean the essence of who they are exists within that field. And so all of the attributes that apply to willingness, when you read about it, you would know that those apply to you. You would be exercising them in your life on a regular basis. Now, you might have moments of fear or anger or things like that, but you kind of dip in and then you come back out again, back up into this area of willingness. If you're sitting in somewhere like anger, and that's the field that you exist in, then you're basically in that field all the time. You're living in a place of anger and hatred, and there's aggression all the time. There's resentment. This is sort of where you're existing. And I think we all know people, or we've had experiences with these people that are at these different areas of consciousness, and what our experience is like when we meet them, what it feels like. I think a really important part here is that the field determines our reality. The visible world is determined by the invisible. Now, what I mean by that, the Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving. It's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
The station that makes you feel good.
What we see in this physical reality, so this very Newtonian materialistic reality that we see everything as observable events. So we see that A leads to B, which leads to C, and that all makes sense. Now, what Dr. Hawkins is saying, what actually precedes all of that, though, is the attractor field, or is the level of consciousness. That's what basically starts and then sets the stage up for whatever we are going to see in our reality. And why this is so important is because whatever field you are in, you're going to be privy to different possibilities. If the attractor field is a very small attractor field, you're only going to be privy to the little bits of possibilities that exist within that field. So for example, think of what it's felt like before if you've ever been in a place of feeling incredibly guilty or shameful. How small does your world get? How much power do you have to be able to make changes in your life? What we see is A leads to B leads to C, but ultimately that is a direct repercussion of the field of shame that we are in. Now, if something happens and we catapult out of that and maybe get catapulted up to like anger, right, which is a much more powerful attractor field in respect to shame, which would be at more like about 150. So all of a sudden our attractor field gets a lot bigger. And now we might be able to actually make some different changes in our life to get out of where our previous circumstances were. So what always happens first, the field takes precedent. Whatever is going on in the field, that is what then we see in our reality. So I have an example here where I show a person holding a magnet, you know, one of those sort of horseshoe looking red magnets. And he's got a magnet out there and he's trying to bring hearts into his field, right? So he's trying to use this magnet as an attractor field to bring love into his life. Now, depending on the size of the magnet, you will be able to attract that in, or you will have a harder time attracting it in. If you've got a very small magnet, a very small attractor field, you're going to have a hard time bringing into your life what it is that you're wanting. Now, sometimes we intellectually want something, you know, from the brain side of things, we get what we want. But if we're not in the right attractor field, we'll never be able to bring that into our lives. And I think we've all had that experience at different times too. Love is a really prime example of that. How many times have you really wanted to have love come into your life, but if you're operating from a place of fear or hurt or anger, it's hard to genuinely bring real love into your life. If you can get a much larger magnet, a much bigger attractor field, now you've got a lot more power to bring that in, okay? Now, another way to look at this is think of attractor fields and possibilities. Now, you've probably heard me talk about this before, but when we think of it from a quantum physics perspective, the world is filled, or the universe is filled, with infinite possibilities. Now, what is going to determine the amount of possibilities that you have access to is the attractor field that you're coming at it from. So I've got a picture here of sort of a universe, of the universe. Now, if my attractor field is just a small little circle, of the infinite possibilities that you can see on that screen, you're only going to be privy to the little bits of possibilities that exist within that circle. So say that's, again, a really small attractor field like fear, okay? If you're stuck in fear, then you're only got so many possibilities that you can tap into. Now, a lot of times, to make significant changes in our lives, we need to be able to connect to different feelings, to different situations. Maybe we need to connect to a feeling of motivation or courage or willingness. We need to be able to see new perspectives. Maybe we need to accept something. Maybe we need to forgive. And maybe we even need to open up unconditional love to see really major differences and changes in our lives. Now, if we've got a really small attractor field, all of those things lie outside of the possibilities within that small attractor field. So if we want to make some bigger changes, we need to get a bigger attractor field that is going to now encompass some of these other things. So all of a sudden, our attractor field, if it gets bigger, all of a sudden, maybe we can now get motivation. Maybe motivation gets within that attractor field. When we start to be able to connect to the energy of motivation, now we can start to make some changes. I see this all the time. If I see someone that's in a state of, say, depression or apathy, really low energy emotion, I'm excited when they actually start to get angry because there's more volition in anger. There's more motivation in anger. Now there's some impetus to want to change something. Now, you don't want to necessarily take anger and turn it into hatred and violence, right? But you can use that energy because it's more powerful field than the, say, guilt or shame or depression that they were sitting in. Now, if we can expand that even larger and gradually get it up, and we can move into a place of courage and willingness, now we're able to start to see our lives from new perspectives. And it's not something that you're trying to force yourself to do. When you move in and you genuinely start to create more willingness and courage, you will see your life from another perspective. It's really frustrating for people when they're trying to see, if you see something only one way. So say, for example, you had a bad experience in a relationship, or you were really hurt and you've got a lot of resentment, and you can only see that relationship and what happened, the experience that you had with that person from only one perspective. You know, you blame them, it's their fault, they did you wrong and you're hurt and now you're never going to forgive them. I get it. I've been there before too. I understand what that feels like. But when you're seeing it from there, you really can't see another perspective from it. You can try to intellectualize it around it, but you're not feeling it. It doesn't feel authentic. The only way it genuinely changes, where we can actually see our life from a new perspective, is when we move into a different attractor field. So when we actually do something that starts to allow courage to surface and willingness to see something, then we automatically, because the field is bigger, we are now able to actually see that situation from different perspectives. And we can feel it. It doesn't have the same intensity wrapped around it. And we can genuinely see, maybe you can see something from that person's perspective. Maybe you can see it from another angle that you just could not see from before. And you actually feel it. Now, if we can expand that even larger, you start to see how you've got more and more tools. Now, if we can get that really large, maybe we can start to get incorporate the energies of acceptance and forgiveness and unconditional love. If we can get those things, then we've got some incredibly powerful tools to make big, big changes in our lives. And the idea is that literally sky's the limit. The larger the attractor field, the more possibilities, the more options that we have. Okay, so let's look at levels of consciousness in others. So remember how Dr. Hawkins talked about how it's not what you say or what you do that changes the world. The world changes as a direct consequence of what we have become. So it doesn't really matter so much what we say or do. I mean, I see this with kids all the time. You can say and do stuff, but they ultimately know who you are and where you're at. And so who we have become is what people respond to, not what we say and do. And what Dr. Hawkins noticed here, because there's so many times people really do want to come out and make changes in the world. We want the world to be a better place. We want to make it a better place for our kids to grow up. But it is directly comes back to who we have become. That is what is going to make the biggest changes in the world. And what Dr. Hawkins found was that one individual at the level of 700 counterbalances 70 million individuals below the level of 200. Now, something that's really important to mention is that, and I don't know where this would be right at the moment, but generally, when Dr. Hawkins looked at the world consciousness, the vast majority, like almost like about three quarters or more of the consciousness of the planet was actually below 200. And think about that. A lot of people functioning in the worlds of anger, fear, frustration, pride. And that only a small percentage actually was above 200. I can't remember the exact numbers at the moment, but I think for a while it was more like about 15% or 20% that function above. But it was because it's a logarithmic scale, that when you are sitting at a higher level of consciousness, that you actually raise the level of the sea for everybody. So it's also when we talk about these tipping points and we're trying to make big changes in the planet, when we get enough people that work, I shouldn't say work, but when we have enough people that are really curious about consciousness, they're curious about just really genuinely becoming the best versions of themselves as we can. As we keep doing that, we raise the level of the sea for everybody. It's like we hold a space for everybody to sort of rise up a little bit. And that's what keeps the consciousness of the planet elevated. And what I'm understanding at this point is that the overall consciousness of the planet itself, as well as humanity, is all starting to come up. And a lot of times when that happens, you see really big pressure cookers. So I think that on a broader scale, what is going on right now on the planet is a pressure cooker that is actually kind of like when we talk about, you know, pressure on a piece of coal that eventually turns into a diamond. I feel like that's kind of what's going on. This pressure cooker is creating enough pressure to see if we can really rise into these levels of consciousness that we're needing to. Now, one individual at the level of 600 can counterbalance 10 million individuals below level 200. Now, these are extraordinarily rare levels of consciousness. You really have to be literally almost like a saint to live in these levels of consciousness. One individual at the level of 500 counterbalances 750,000 individuals below the level of 200. This is the level that Dr. Hawkins actually says we should all aspire to, is to try and get to the level of 500, which is the level of love. That's very doable. And he said, essentially, that's all that's really needed. The other ones are different levels of sort of enlightenment to some degree. But 500 at that level of genuine, pure love is what we should be striving to move towards and is very doable in this lifetime. One individual at the level of 400 counterbalances 400,000 individuals below the level of 200. One individual at 300 counterbalances 90,000 individuals below level 200. And 12 individuals at the level of 700 equal one avatar at 1,000. So when Dr. Hawkins originally talked about avatars calibrating at 1,000, that's of pure enlightenment. That's at pure enlightenment. He would say those were people like the ascended masters that we've heard of. So whether that's Jesus or whether that's Buddha or Krishna or some of the other ascended masters that you're probably aware of. Now, what are the benefits to using the map? Why do we want to use it? Well, I think the first one is that it helps to better understand the world. When things are going on, when we can see them through these different viewpoints, it helps us understand why things are happening. It also helps me understand personally when things are taking place, or even with loved ones or different relationships that we're in, when people say certain things or react in certain ways, it helps me understand why they're doing that. It gives me an idea of the field that they're operating from and how they're seeing what is going on in the world, how they're seeing everything around them and how they're seeing a specific situation. I mean, most of this time, I would say all of the time, it has very little to do with you. It has to do with how the individual is seeing the event. And I mean, that's a pretty well-known concept. You could have three different people that see something that takes place. They all saw the exact same thing, but each one of them has a very personal, different experience with what they actually saw. One person might see it through the eyes of anger, another person through the eyes of love, and somebody else through the eyes of shame, and have very different experience of what that event meant to them and how it made them feel. The Inspire Health Podcast will be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
It helps us understand why some people do horrible things while others are purely loving. It explains some of life's problems and reminds you of your highest calling. It gives us hope. And I think really, probably one of the most important ones is that it helps us to have compassion for humankind. I mean, much of the world lives in lower levels of consciousness, and each level has its own reality, and you can only act according to the level that you are living at. Dr. Hawkins used to say that we all do the best that we can, and if we were capable of doing better, we would. End of story. If we were capable of doing better, we would. This helps me so much because when I can't understand why sometimes certain people are doing certain things or acting in a certain way, if I can understand the fact that they're operating from a certain field of consciousness and that from that level of consciousness, they are not capable of seeing the world differently. They are only able to access the limited possibilities within that field. They cannot see it from another perspective. That is the lens that shades everything. And so when we understand that when people are operating from that, or even when we are operating from that too, even more importantly, when we recognize what field we are operating from, but when we realize that other people are in a certain field, we have compassion for them because we know what it can feel like. And if we can relate back to ourselves, whenever we've had those experiences, when we've been stuck in some of these different levels of consciousness, we just don't know how to get out. That definitely gives you a lot of compassion for other people when they've gone through it as well. I remember watching an interview once where Eckhart Tolle was interviewed by Oprah. And they were having this conversation. I think it was on a Super Soul Sunday or something like that. And he was saying something along this idea as well, around that we do the best that we can. If we could do better, we would. And I remember Oprah saying, well, I remember this. And she goes, and I knew better, but I still didn't do better. So what do you mean by that? He said, no, he goes, if you were at that level, you would have done better. But you weren't at that level, so you didn't. So a lot of times we maybe know better, but if we're not actually doing better, then we haven't achieved, we're not living our life from that level of consciousness yet. So I think the awareness of it opens the door for us to eventually start to move to that and live from that place. But think of it the same as if you were trying to stop a bad habit, like say smoking or eating too much sugar or something along those lines. Most of the time what happens is you can try to force yourself to do it with, like, you know, really strict discipline and being hard on yourself. And maybe you get a little bit down the road on that, but eventually it doesn't work. We usually go back to it. You know, you come back to your pattern again. That pattern just goes away when all of a sudden we move to a different level of consciousness where that behavior is not a part of that field of consciousness anymore. And then it's not even work. It literally just is no longer part of who you are. You know, Dr. Joe Dispenza will do a lot of work in this sort of way where they're trying to literally put themselves into a different state of consciousness where the problems that they currently have no longer exist. And when they get to this state of consciousness, the physical problems that they have literally just disappear because they no longer resonate with that body anymore. And they've seen spontaneous remissions of cancers where people get into a certain state of consciousness where the energy of the cancer no longer resonates with the field of consciousness that they're in, and it literally just starts to disappear. It can be pretty fascinating when you start to use it in this regard, but it is completely experiential. It is not something that you can force. Okay. I think we are very much conditioned to thinking that we need to make things happen, and that's not the way that it works. I'll talk about that more in just a moment. So there's two big fulcrums when we talk about the map of consciousness. These are basically major, major fulcrums that are necessary to make massive changes in your life. The first one is the level of courage, and that is the level of 200. That is when you move from anti-life to pro-life. That is absolutely essential if we want to start to have positive change in our world. We need to develop courage. Now, let's take a look at what courage is. So Dr. Hawkins said that this is a critical point. Level of courage at 200, we can change our life. We have the courage to tell the truth about ourselves instead of blaming someone else. So what I would do as a practice, you can even do this like once a week, you know, or before you go to bed at night, run through. Is there anybody that we are blaming? Is there anybody that we are blaming? And it's not to say that maybe there's not something that they did that we could blame. It's not saying that they're innocent. But I remember this in personally from my own experience. A lot of my lessons came from my own personal romantic relationships. I had a lot of really beautiful relationships, but I also had a lot of very difficult, challenging relationships that were huge growths for me to learn in order for me to eventually move to a place where I feel like I was able to then meet my wife and have a really loving, beautiful relationship. But in some of those challenging times, it's very easy to blame my partner for either cheating on me or for doing something that was insensitive or hurtful or whatever it might be. And a lot of times I think it's very easy for us to blame the other person for things. But ultimately, if you want to take the power back to make changes in your life, the only thing we can really do is look at how did we end up in a situation like that? Because in the reality of it, in some way, we resonated with that person. So there was something. So my tendency after this, not initially, but once I learned more about this, after a relationship broke up, I would get a journal out and I would look at and basically take responsibility for my own life. It's like, how did I end up in this dynamic? What did I learn from this? What was my role in what happened? What could I have done differently, right? And I'm looking at it from all angles. It's like, how do we really use that as a mirror and to reflect back on ourselves so that we can learn from it and then grow from the experience and hopefully have better experiences in the future, or at least not so many painful experiences to try and learn the lessons. Sometimes it's nice to have lessons that aren't always hard and painful ones to learn the lessons. It's nice to sometimes have the fun experiences where we can learn different lessons. Ultimately, we get both. But the key there is telling the truth about ourselves instead of blaming someone else. And courage and dedication are necessary to overcome the self-centered ego. So ego gets a bad rap. You know, it's kind of been demonized in a lot of ways. I mean, we need the ego. The ego helps us survive in this world, but we don't want to be a servant to the ego. And so it takes a lot of courage and dedication to be able to catch when we are acting from a place of self-centered ego versus a place of, I would say, more of that divine self, which we're all trying to ultimately connect more and more to as we go along. The energy of courage at 200 is the energy of integrity, self-honesty, and real empowerment. And real empowerment ultimately comes when we take self-responsibility, when we're honest with ourselves, right? When we are coming from that place of integrity. So if we're not capable of being honest with ourselves and our role in things and our weaknesses, where the chinks in our own armor are, then we can't really empower because we're not being truthful. So the better that we can be truthful with ourselves, the more that we can actually start to implement the changes that are necessary to make our life move in a different direction. Below courage or anti-life, they come from a place of force, whereas levels above it are supportive for life, they come from a place of power. I kind of think of this as like force because like you're trying to push the rock up the mountain, whereas power comes from something's pulling it up the mountain. It's very different feel. You're working hard at it from a place of force and from a place of power. It's almost like the universe has your back. It's assisting you in many, many ways. Now, the next level that's really critical is the level of 500. And this is the importance of love. And like I had said, Dr. Hawkins said that this is really a major aspiration that we should all try to attain. This is something that is very attainable for everybody that's here. Some of the levels above that, you know, you're often in like sainthood and you're up on a mountain somewhere. So some of those places are hard to literally be in the world and maintain a level of consciousness like that. A lot of times you have to be outside of the world. This is why people sometimes disappear to monasteries or live on a mountain or somewhere. It's just being in the world is just too challenging. It pulls you back down. The level of 500 is doable. You can live in the world and you can make a massive impact in your own lives and the lives of those around you and on the planet by moving more and more to this level. There's been a lot of talk around love. Now, I think ultimately, there's different concepts of what love means. And even from what Dr. Hawkins said, I've heard different things. When I listen to things from Dr. Jacqueline Hobbs, Oracle Girl, when she talks about pure love, it's in a very connected place to source and to acting in a natural way that is uncensored. So I feel like it's such a ownership of who you are without censoring. And not coming from a place of malice at all, but just not censoring yourself, being very authentic and true and tied to nature principles. That very much resonates with me as well. But I would implore you all to check out Dr. Hawkins' book and read what each level of consciousness actually means. I may at some point try and break down lectures on each one of the levels so that we get an idea of what that field actually feels like and how we see the world and then what we need to do in order to work to move from that level to the next level. But you can read about them in the book. A lot of times our concept of love is very much a romanticized version of love, which I would say often is not love at all. When we think of movies like Hollywood love, it's not love at all. It's more lust, and it's more actually probably dependency, I would say, than it is anything to do with love. Real love is a very, very powerful field. Now, this level of 500, this level of love is reached by accepting love and non-judgmental forgiveness as a lifestyle. So accepting love and non-judgmental forgiveness as a lifestyle. Now, these are not easy things. And this is why love is a very worthwhile pursuit, but it is not for the meek at heart. Okay. It is, think about that, non-judgmental forgiveness. Think about just over this, probably this past day, have we been able to forgive with non-judgmentalism? What are we still holding on to? Exercising unconditional kindness to all persons, things, and events without exception. Exercising unconditional kindness to all persons, things, and events without exception. So these are very, very strong practices, especially in today's world that is so incredibly polarized. And this doesn't mean that you can't have your own opinions and you can't have your own strong opinions on things. That's totally okay. We're supposed to. We're all unique individuals. We're supposed to have different perspectives. This is what adds the flavor and the diversity to our lives. But what Dr. Hawkins is talking about, can we have those and still have an unconditional kindness towards all people, things, and events without exception? To me, the only way that I'm capable of doing that for some things is to surrender that there is a bigger picture going on than what I can see at any moment in time. Otherwise, my ego needs to try to understand it from my limited perspective that I have. And most of the time from that perspective, we get very much stuck into judgmentalism. It's very difficult to not have strong opinions without strong judgments of what's good, bad, right, wrong, all of these different things. So the thing that helps me the most is I often will come back to saying, okay, well, this is what I believe right now, and this is what I feel strongly about, and that's totally okay. But can I leave a place where I'm not always feeling angry or really pissed off at the other person for having a very different opinion than I do, or having a different belief structure than what I do? And so if I can think about it and say, well, you know what, I know this, if I could see the big picture, and knowing that I only know this little piece, there's probably something going on that I'm just not able to see. So when I can pose it like that to myself, recognizing that I only know one small piece of the big puzzle, that helps me to have a little bit more kindness for situations, for different people that have very strong opinions outside of mine. Now, that also doesn't mean that you have to lovingly accept those people into your life. There's a big place for boundaries. Unconditional kindness doesn't mean that you are a doormat and that you get pushed over. I mean, gosh, look at strong people like, you know, Martin Luther King. I mean, Martin Luther King was unconditionally kind, nonviolent, but I mean, he was strong, but he was powerful. He had very strong boundaries. He knew himself and he knew he could speak from a place of being uncensored. So I think a lot of times we get these concepts mixed up. We think that there's almost a passivity that goes in with being loving or kind or gentle, right? But a lot of times these are incredibly powerful fields of consciousness, and there's no place for weakness within those. I think we just have these different words and these different concepts that we sort of attribute to different things. And ultimately, we don't really know until we're there. Once we're there, then we know what it feels like. And I would say probably a lot of people that think they're there probably aren't exactly there. So I would come back to some of these and then see and be very brutally honest with ourselves as far as where are the chinks in our armor, right? When do things stir up for us? Where are our triggers, right? Those are great ways to see where we are on the scale. Love is the silent power that inspires, heals, uplifts, encourages, and improves everything. So definitely the field to aspire to. Once you make this commitment, you begin to experience a different, more benign world as your perceptions evolve. So remember, this is the lens you see everything with. And even though this would not be necessarily love, in the form that I'm talking about it here. But think about if you've ever been very depressed and low and how you saw everything. Even if walking down the street and how you saw like the homeless person on the side of the road or how you saw the park when you walked through, right? Where you, whatever it was, how you saw anything, even if you watched a movie and how much you liked or disliked the movie, depending on the state of consciousness that you were in. So if you were in a place of depression, then all of a sudden something happened and you fell head over heels in love, whatever that was for you. Probably wasn't real love, but it might have put you right up to a place of like enthusiasm or something along those lines. And all of a sudden, everything you see looks different. Nothing in the external world changed, but your viewpoint, your lens that you see the world through dramatically changed because of how your shift in consciousness was. When we are able to move into a field as powerful as love at the level of 500, everything that we're going to see is going to be different than how we personally see it right now. And knowing that the world changes according to our level of consciousness also can give us a little bit of humble pie for when we get sort of adamant that things have to be a certain way. And I'm to blame for that too. I mean, I definitely will have my strong opinions on certain things, but when I think about it like this, it always helps me pull back to realize that I'm seeing one specific perspective and there's always more to see. This comes to the end of our time for this episode. Please go to inspirehealthpodcast.com and listen to the remainder of this important episode. Thank you so much.